Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
And on behalf of Chad and myself, we would like to welcome you to a very happy new year. It is now 2018, which means the Jumanji movie is out into the world and making money.
Everything I hear about this movie, every time somebody tweets about it, every time somebody talks about it, they say how much they enjoyed this movie. I still have not heard your review of the movie. I'm not going to do that here because I want to listen to it first. But I'm just saying it doesn't look like the turd that some people thought it was going to be.
No, actually quite the opposite. Not a turd. Just, you know, a film that has a lot to say. Let's just say that. I gifted the world an entire drunken hour of thoughts on the movie. So
next time we do this, it'll be well enough after the holidays. I finally got to listen to it, and then we'll see how much I laughed at it.
Indeed. So Chad, there's not been a whole lot of news in the last couple of weeks, except to say that fans are still pretty upset about The Last Jedi.
Mate, look, I know it's fanboys and whatnot, but man, You take all the joy out of stuff. Just enjoy that you had a Star Wars movie. You may not have agreed with all the choices. I didn't agree with all the choices. But, you know, all in all, I think everybody would say that it's a well-made movie. You should get some enjoyment out of it. But, man, y'all are just so unhappy.
They're very, very, very displeased people that Luke Skywalker never left the island.
Look, there are worse things to get upset about.
And it hurts. It hurts their soul, Chad, that George basically proposed this.
Did he?
Yes. In his pitch to Disney, he was like, Luke Skywalker should be old and embittered and, you know, wanting to walk away from the Jedi Order.
I mean, something should happen. There was a reason he wasn't there in the first one. I mean, making him old and bitter seems like the logical choice. It's just that's not the way a lot of you wanted it. I understand that. I want to see him take out the green lightsaber and kill some people, but it didn't happen. But I like the movie. Just enjoy what you got.
But, Chad, like, Rey can do all kinds of crazy things without having good parentage.
Okay, see, this in lies the point that I heard, I can't remember who said it, but it's not like this is not unprecedented for Star Wars. I mean, how long did Luke train with Yoda? I mean, all I saw him do was do a couple backflips and hold a little Muppet on his back and fail at getting a X-Wing out of the swamp. And then he went off, lost hands to his daddy, and then comes back and returned to the Jedi. He's all Black Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker badass, and we're supposed to just be like okay with that? Particularly that movie takes place 6 months after Empire, and you're going to complain about Rey? Why? Nerds.
Well, I mean, we covered a lot of this on our podcast immediately following the movie. A lot of people were going to have issues, and amazingly enough, the Leia stuff has not been nearly as torched over as just the basics of Luke Skywalker. And I think what it is lends itself, and I talked a little bit about this on our podcast, is there's a set of fanboys out there that only care about the EU. The EU is their canon, and Disney took a giant leak on it immediately after buying Lucasfilm. And now they're upset because the way that this whole thing is being set up in the depiction of Luke Skywalker that they're getting on Octu is not the same Luke Skywalker that they were told exist through the expanded universe canon. They want that story, and they want it played out on the big screen. The problem is, even if you gave that to them, as we've seen with Age of Ultron and Infinity War and Winter Soldier and all these other things, Marvel takes names of things and doesn't adapt and beat for beat, and people get upset. They could go and do, you know, those stories from the expanded universe, but they'd probably not do them the exact way that they're done in the comics or in the books, and that would upset people just as much. So, like, why, like, Lucasfilm told you, like, Disney told you, this stuff is legends. Now, there's a little bit of truth in every legend, but this stuff is legend. Everything, every book, every comic book, every movie we put out from here on is our version of how, our timeline of how this happened. And you've got to accept that, because if you don't, if you keep getting angry because this Luke Skywalker doesn't resemble the one from the EU, I mean, you're just going to live a miserable life.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's, for a large portion of Star Wars fans, while they love and revere the movies, I think that their fandom is so built upon the EU, because, I mean,
for 30 years, it was all that, or 25 years, it was all they had.
Exactly. So that has what cemented them as Star Wars fans, and now Disney's like, no, we're not going to use this. We can cherry pick it if we want. And in that statement, they're like, okay, but they'll still cherry pick some of the stuff that I knew and some of the stuff I like. But when they give you this Luke, you're like, no, this ain't nowhere near what I thought, what my fandom was built on. So I've got to cry bloody murder instead of, you know, saying they're telling a new story. Let me, you don't have to like it, but you don't have to like do this. You throw your nerd fits, nerd rage all over.
Nerd rage, which nerd rage that committed a very bad cinema score. Rotten Tomatoes audience score. Here's my concern, and I implored, I said this on Twitter, and I've said it other places. Like, my concern is that they're gonna back down, that they're gonna cede, that they're gonna course correct. Part of the problem for me here is there is not a thus saith the Lord Kevin Feige. Like, Kathleen Clint Kennedy has an idea, but as far as we know, like, they were flying by the seat of their pants just to get The Force Awakens made. Mm-hmm. It was like, we're going to fire our screenwriter in October, we're going to deliver a new draft of the script by January, and we're going to start shooting in April. And, like, that's how much time J.J. and Kasdan had to walk around the streets of Europe figuring this stuff out. So there was no, say what you want to about George, George knew what the beginning, middle, and end of his sagas were. He knew what track he wanted them to go on. He wasn't going to ask questions that he wasn't prepared to answer or didn't already know what the answer was down the line. We're in a situation now where there were whole threads that J.J. Abrams set up in Force Awakens that Rian Johnson wanted absolutely no part of, and he took a giant dump on those, and he created his own sets of questions, which J.J. may or may not decide to want to answer in 9. And so it creates this, I think it would be easier on them if they had a straight directive, like, this is the direction that we're going for the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that, and I'm concerned that in this post-prequels world, you know, they played it safe with Force Awakens for a reason, because they were terrified of the reaction the prequels got. They got some blowback for being called a New Hope redo and all that, but it was minimal. It didn't affect their box office, didn't affect their commercial sales, didn't affect any of that. This time they gave an auteur filmmaker free reign to do whatever he wanted and define Star Wars however he wanted, pretty much. And now you're getting hit on all sides from your fan base. And you've got a movie that has so much production troubles that's due out in 5 months. We haven't seen a photo of actual, like, official still photo. We've seen, like, snippets of things that Ron Howard's been posting on Twitter. We haven't seen an official image from this movie, and we're 4 months away, and they fired Lord Miller because they were going too off the rails, and they reshot the movie almost entirely, and that movie's telling a story that not many people want to be told in the Han Solo origin story. So if we get to a point where you're getting hit from all sides on Last Jedi, and Solo, like, gets dinged up, you know, 4 months later, now my concern is that they're going to rein J.J. in and go, okay, we need to go back, and we need to play it safe, and we need to, you know, reconsider our options here, because clearly they're not liking what we're doing. And, like, with the Johnston trilogy that's supposed to come out starting in the 2020s, well, can, like, now he's going to have heat on him from this, in not a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does what the fan base wants him to do, which is go make Knights of the Old Republic, what happens if he goes and does Knights of the Old Republic and it's his idea of what Knights of the Old Republic is? He will get scorched alive for it, because it won't be what they want. So I'm terrified right now about the state of the Star Wars universe, because I'm terrified that Kathleen Kennedy and them are going to balk.
So I can see all of you have all valid points. It's tough, because I really think most of the heat from this is coming from the Star Wars fan base.
Like, people over 40.
Yeah, the critics loved it. You saw the cinema score, which was an A, which is, that means the people
just
actually
a step
saw
below,
it.
Yeah, step below what Force Awakens was, yeah. Which is an A+.
So that means the general movie audience that went to see the movie enjoyed it.
Tracking about 175 million behind Force Awakens at this point.
Yeah, which is to be expected. I think the tail at the tape will be what it ends up worldwide. I think if it ends up anywhere above 1.5, that's a success. That's what they wanted. And nobody's expecting it to get 2 like Force Awakens did. So if it makes over 1.5, I think you can kind of put your fears aside, because like, well, this hit right in the target that we had for it. Yeah, the fans revolted, but you know, the fans do that.
They have rabbit ears, though, Shad. Like, these are hypersensitive people coming off the prequels. Like, we're not far enough away from those for them to, like, feel confident in the firm foundation that they are establishing. And I think that's going to cause some people in the story group and over in San Francisco to kind of reassess things, especially if we get to a point where you're getting hit on all sides for Last Jedi, and then your reaction on both levels, critical and fan reaction, is not great to the hot mess that is the Han Solo story.
Well, in the fact that they picked JJ, who is, you know, the safe choice, I think they're already kind of reverting back away from some things. I don't know if they're going to go completely and like say, okay, all these things you hated about The Last Jedi, we're going to go ahead and undo. I don't think they'll do that, but I don't think we'll get anything as, I guess, fan upsetting as we got in The Force Awakens in whatever episode 9 is going to be. And because they have to start developing 9 right now, we can't depend on what the reaction to Han Solo is going to be, because they'll be, the story's got to at least
be
done by then.
No, well, the story will be done by then, but they were writing as they went on Force Awakens, and if they're gonna start shooting in June. So, on 9. So, Han Solo will already have been out, which, by the way, it does not track with me that the first part of your penultimate ending to the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to come out, and then 2 weeks later you're going to follow it up with your own property that is huge and going to cannibalize your own audience.
It's the last weekend.
Is it Memorial Day weekend?
Yeah, it's the last weekend in May. I think the way May works, sometimes you get like
5 weeks.
Yeah, so it might actually be 4 weeks apart, which I think 3 is good. A 4th week is like
ideal.
So, and looking at the list that we'll go over later, I mean, there's Avengers and there's Han Solo and there's nothing else in between. So I think they're good the way the calendar works. I guess I'll look at what the calendar looks like. But Yeah, I can see the concern, but you know, when Disney owns everything, you're gonna run into those things eventually. So I think 4 weeks is the best case scenario. But Han Solo is gonna be a mystery until we actually get to see this sucker. I would imagine we'll start seeing something from it within the next month. Because I think the Super Bowl.
You don't think that they could go all the way to the Super Bowl without showing anything?
See, I think Super Bowl is the last line, but I think you kind of have to show something before that.
Well, he did tweet out a picture saying he was happy that the Solo gang's looking forward to a very prosperous 2018, which was a shot of the steering wheel.
And there's an unofficial photo of Han and Lando that looks official, but they didn't officially leak it.
Well, that's so, the poster has him.
The Super Bowl is the next big event since they're using the college football playoff for all Black Panther all the time. So Super Bowl makes the most logical sense unless you stick it in between one of those. If ABC has one of the NFL championship games going into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's Fox and CBS.
Okay, so, well, I mean, they still could do it, but it just makes more sense not to do it that way. Super Bowl is the line of demarcation. You have to do something by then. It's just a matter of will we see it before then or not. It's a whole month from now, so that'll be something to keep an eye on.
So while we were away on our holiday break, a little thing called the Disney-Fox merger became official.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
We talked about this in some detail before Star Wars, and obviously our post-Star Wars episodes have been filled with nothing but Star Wars news. What are our thoughts on the merger, the acquisition of 21st Century Fox and 20th Century Fox properties by the Buena Vista Entertainment Company?
So there's a couple of different ways you can look at it. I'll start with like the genre fan that I am. This is all good news, particularly because of, you know, Marvel and Fox. Because Fox owns the X-Men, and more importantly to me, they own the Fantastic Four. And I know that Marvel has wanted to get their hot little hands on both of those properties.
Fantastic Four now lives.
Phase Fantastic Four is now, like, we're about a year and a half away from this thing being, like, final once it goes through all
the... Yeah, 18 months.
Yeah, and 18 months is just enough time that, there's another little movie coming out that it could be final just enough so you can put a little tag on the end and be like, well, we do have Fantastic Four, and... Yeah. But, so that part is all exciting. Of course, on the money side, that means great things for Disney because they want to do the streaming service stuff. And now this is just giving them
content.
Lots of content. So, they can be a real player when they decide to launch it in the next year, 2 years, something like that.
And they can use the bones of Hulu to do it.
Yeah. Yes. I really think that, they won't just create a whole nother thing. They'll just take over Hulu, and since they'll have the majority stakes in it. But the downside would be, especially for creatives, it's one less studio you get to go to, because they're going to consolidate stuff. It's not going to be two boards and all this other stuff.
I think that the majority of the stuff that's going to be combined is going to be the marketing and distribution side of things. Like, people who work in marketing and distribution right now at 21st Century Fox are going to lose their jobs because Disney already has those people. Like, they already have the marketing people. They already have the distribution people. They already have the publicity people. They don't need two of those. Look, I'm happy because they're going to let Fox Searchlight live, and they're going to let Fox Searchlight continue to put out quality entertainment. So that's good. Look, yeah, I'm excited that Doctor Doom and Galactus and, you know, and the Silver Surfer all get to go play in the MCU. That's awesome. I'm glad that Disney could potentially make more Planet of the Apes films if Matt Reeves wanted to come back and do that. I'm really excited about those possibilities. I'm concerned with... Where I'm concerned is that the majority of opportunities for people to flourish and to be creative and do different and individual thing, different interpretive pieces of art is lost. Now, the question on my mind that I'm most interested in is, we talked for a while after Homecoming came out about how, you know, Disney should just go ahead and buy Sony and put them out of their misery and get Spider-Man back completely to themselves. Sony owns Columbia TriStar Pictures. It's Sony's name attached to Jumanji because it was a Columbia TriStar venture back in 1995. That's a vast library that goes back to the 1930s. It's almost as large of a library as what Fox has.
Yes.
Yet I get the feeling that if it had been Sony Burbank that had been bought out by Disney, and Pascal and Tom Rothman would have, you know, made that transition, not near the protest and upset and uproar would have been made if it, you know, because Sony has been hemorrhaging money for so long, because Sony is a bit player, it doesn't have a huge awards arm, it doesn't have a huge slate of active franchise opportunities, and most people can't think off the top of their head of a great Columbia TriStar movie or brand that just resonates with them. A lot of their franchises are now dormant. The Jump Street franchise is dormant again. The Men in Black franchise is dormant again. But I get the feeling that if it was them buying Sony, everybody would have been like, okay, because Sony had less to offer. And Sony wasn't a major player. It was still one of the Power Five, but it was the American conference of the, you know, of the group of the Power Five.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas, you know, this is like the SEC and the ACC merging together. And it works because they're all regional and it takes up an entire side of the country and it's what's in the best interest of everybody from a geographic standpoint, but it limits opportunities and choices and productivity. Now, what I think they're going to end up doing is what they did with Lucasfilm, what they did with Marvel, what they've done with Pixar, which is, you know, hey, Lasseter, you want to go do Pixar stuff? Great. Do whatever you want. Come over here. We also need you to help us work on our animation division because we've been crappy here for the last 10 years, and we just put out Princess and the Frog, and while it was beautiful, no one went to see it. So can you come help us work out some stuff over here? Hey, Kevin Feige, you want to go do a whole bunch of stuff? We'll fire Perlmutter, and you can be in charge, so you can do whatever you want. Hey, Kathleen Kennedy, you know, George handpicked you. He wants you to run things. That's great. You know, just make sure the movies come out on time, and we're good. They're probably going to do the same thing in 20th Century Fox. Uh-huh. I think that they will allow Fox Searchlight to continue to operate. One thing that has gotten lost over the last few years is the fact that, you know, Disney owned Touchstone and Disney owned Miramax at one point in time. They weren't exactly putting out, like, family-friendly entertainment. Like, American Beauty and Shakespeare in Love are not family-friendly films, yet they put them out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's where we're heading. I think that I'm okay with it. I just feel that there would have been less controversy if they'd have bought Sony than if they bought 20th Century Fox.
Yeah, because everybody knows that Sony, you know, like you said, hemorrhaging money. So it wouldn't have been a surprise for Sony to be like, we're done with this. We make video games and TVs and stuff, and that works. This movie stuff is not cracked up. But yeah, because it's Fox, there's a little bit more of an uproar. But Yeah, it's. I do think they'll keep it as its own thing and let them do it, let them do whatever they need to do. It's just going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out in consolidation. I do think, because Fox owns Blue Sky Studio, which is an animation arm, and while I enjoy some of the movies they made, notably the Peanuts movie, I don't remember anything else.
They are responsible for all of the Ice Age movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
which has been running to the ground.
Yeah, so I think Ice Age is their big thing. As you said, running to the ground. So maybe they'll just retire that and just shut that studio down completely. And maybe cherry pick the ideas that studio is working on and get them going. Like, if they do another Peanuts movie, which I really enjoy, they can do that.
Paul Feig.
Yes, he was involved. He was a producer on that.
Director, I think.
He didn't direct, but he was a producer.
So, that is where we stand on the Fox-Disney merger. So, Chad, 2017 was a tumultuous year in a lot of ways, in a lot of areas. But one way it was not tumultuous was in producing great art. We got a lot of good movies, great movies that came out in 2017. So, we want to look back at 2017, and we want to know what your favorite films and your least favorite films were of 2017.
My favorite films. So I didn't get to see any like of the artsy films yet of the year. So I'm never going to see them in 2017 since we were no longer there.
Well, I blame theater distribution for that, because like it has to get over 800. It has to open in over 800 theaters in order to get to us. Like, I'm still amazed Lady Bird got to us for like 2 weeks.
Well, with those kind of movies, it's. I have to do them when I am free and clear of kids, period. And I get a showing that we do so we can talk about it, and then I have to bring my kids to the movie. So the artsy movies normally wait until around this time, because she's doing other stuff and then I can go and see them. So I never get to see them in the year they come out. So that's normally leaves me with a lot of cartoons and comic book movies. So that's where we're going to go. I'll just say, first off, we had, six, seven comic book movies this year? And with the exception of one, they were all good. I liked them to varying degrees. One, the one that everybody is in love with, which is Logan, I liked the least out of all of them.
Come on now, you didn't like gritty, dark, neo-western?
I mean, it was fine, but I'll never... Like, it's on HBO right now. It's been on HBO for a week. I've seen it on there like 6 times. And every time I see it, I'm like, eh. And I don't even turn it on there. I hate watching Batman vs. Superman every time that stupid movie comes on. Yet I look at Logan, I'm like, eh, I don't have to see that ever again.
Justice League tracking at about $180 million behind Wonder Woman.
Didn't they already pull them? And this run is pretty much over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, whatever. We'll talk about them some other time. But so my favorite movie out of that bunch would be Spider-Man Homecoming, because I love Spider-Man and I watch the movie all the time. Of other ones that I would have seen, like, again, lots of cartoons, so the first thing that comes to mind is Coco. That stupid movie made me cry. I don't appreciate that it made me cry, but what I really don't appreciate is that they put this stupid Frozen short in front of it. However, I got to miss most of it because I went to the concession stand while that 20-minute sucker was playing.
Yeah, they put it on there for like a week, and then they pulled it, and then they put it on Disney for everybody to see, on ABC for everybody to see.
Yeah, and that would have been the move to start with, because my kid can watch it in her room, and I can go watch something else.
Well, the other part of that too is that with 20 minutes of previews plus a 20-minute short, it makes it's 40 like, minutes before you even see the movie.
Yeah, when I walked in, I'm like, oh, we're gonna. I looked at the runtime for Coco. I'm like, why is this movie 2 hours? They normally do like 140 is pushing it. And I was like, oh, that stupid Frozen short. And then I was like, wait, that means we got 30 minutes of previews on top of that. That's 2.5 hours. My kid is better at this than a lot, but still, I don't blame kids that were wigging out. But Coco itself was a beautiful movie. With again, because you know, everything revolves around my kid. It really touched my heart. The whole heart of that story. So it made me cry. I felt like, you know, I shouldn't be crying at this movie, but I am, and here we are. But yeah, that. What else did I see that wasn't any of that type of movie? This year was not a whole lot. I didn't get a whole lot of run on anything else. Yeah, so I'm gonna stick with those two as my favorites. My least favorite. Again, I didn't hate anything that I saw in. Wait. I blocked it from my mind. We went to see Transformers.
Yes, we did.
Went. There we go. Winner, right there. Or in this case, loser, because that movie was terrible. I didn't fall asleep on it, but it was terrible. I was officially through with it when, spoiler alert, the words were uttered. The camera shows Mark Wahlberg, and the words are uttered. He's the last knight in a Transformers movie. I'm like, I'm done with you for life. I'm done with everything about you. Get out of my face.
Michael Bay may have actually killed the thing.
He may have.
The Bumblebee movie is a character piece with character development and story, which will be something different according to the producers.
Look, this is really early, and I'm going to hate myself for it, but they're talking about this and doing all the right things with this movie so far, because there's an image for the Bumblebee movie, and that image is of
a Volkswagen Beetle.
That's it. That's what Bumblebee is. You have successfully kicked down the nostalgia door, and I'm willing to let you walk in. So you've done something, Bumblebee movie. Now it's up to you to keep this going.
I will take this opportunity to remind you that it is a movie that has John Cena in it as a heavy lead, playing the Marky Mark character, basically, of overprotective father.
See, I've heard different things. I wouldn't say he's... When you say Marky Mark, I know the girl is, like, the heavy lead. When you say Marky Mark, that'll make me think, like, he's, like, a shade below her. But I think I've heard he's, like, a few shades down. I can deal with a few shades down. I'm not terribly on board with Marky Mark level. But, you know, again, you kick down the door. I'm entertaining you come crossing the threshold. It's up to you if you get to cross the threshold.
Anything else that you just absolutely did not enjoy?
Not enjoy, no. I've talked ad nauseum about my feelings on Justice League and what
we did a whole podcast on just the reaction to the storm that surrounded that movie.
We did that podcast standing up because I couldn't sit down because I was pacing and upset. So yeah, I've talked about that a whole lot. I didn't hate the movie. There's some good things in the movie. The studio's reaction to the movie dumbfounded me because they always knew what they had, and it's exactly what we got. So
the stories do neither side any good.
No. So at this point, it's just up to them what they want to do, and. Because it's WB, nobody has an idea what they want to do. But that's off the top of my head. That's what I have. Nothing else strikes me as worthy of saying I hated it or that I loved it. Most of the things I really, really enjoyed. And that's a good year.
Indeed. So, there are a couple of things here. First of all, the movie that I enjoyed the most in 2017 was Lady Bird. It is, for my money, the best picture of the year. And I know that it will get a Best Picture nomination. Mm-hmm. It will not win. At this point, I'm leaning toward Call Me By Your Name as the front runner for the Oscar, just simply because I don't know that they will give Del Toro the love that he deserves for Shape of Water, which is also a tremendous, tremendous film. But really, like, Shape of Water, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, and Lady Bird are all deserving of the kind of attention that they're getting. And they were all tremendously great films. I am very... Like, I'm excited to see that over the last 3 years, we've started to move away from this conversation about you have to have be released, you have to have a release window between October and December to get qualified and to be in the conversation to win an Oscar. Well, Moonrise Kingdom, Mad Max Fury Road, Grand Budapest Hotel have clearly shown that you can get out there in May and still keep yourself relevant. And so I'm happy to see Dunkirk is following in that those footsteps this year by putting themselves out there and continuing to keep themselves relevant, holding screenings more regularly, re-releasing the movie into theaters again, doing those kinds of things to keep themselves in the conversation, because I feel like the film is definitely worthy of that, especially in the IMAX format. I enjoyed all of Marvel's output. I was a little underwhelmed with Thor Ragnarok. I think they leaned a bit too heavy into the humor, especially for something I know that it's the classic fanboy criticism. It's Ragnarok! It should be serious! Like, I can appreciate humor because, you know, humor is a hallmark and a calling card of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But at the same time, man, like, you don't have to go that crazy with it. So, but I liked all of Marvel's output. I very much enjoyed The Last Jedi. But, like, for me, it's those smaller movies like Lady Bird that just kind of just blow you away. And you go, this is tremendously great. Split and Get Out and It, all three really benefited the horror genre really well. I'm hesitant to be excited for what Shyamalan's doing next because there's a part of me that's like, this guy was put in director's jail. His movies only work if the twist works. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time in like 15 years his twist worked. So now you're going to give him a whole bunch more money and give Blum a whole bunch more money than he's ever had in his life and say, go make it bigger and better and merge it together with the Unbreakable and let's do this thing. Like, I'm terrified that he's going to, like, get overconfident and go back to his roots and just, you know, miss the mark again, which I think is I couldn't see how we could get out of director's jail after that. I'm excited for the casting in the anticipation for It Part 2. It's going to be interesting for me to see if they can go through the entirety of 2018 keeping that film out there and resonant in the consciousness, so that we get to a point where when we ramp up the publicity for It Chapter 2 that people are excited and want to go see it again. Because horror sequels are almost as bad as comedy sequels. As far as reception. As far as things I didn't like, or films that I had a serious distaste for, obviously Transformers The Last Night was an unbearable 2.5 hours that I'm never getting back of my life. I felt like Jumanji was worth it, so obviously that's not on my list. But I think, like, as far as, like, the film that I hated or the film that I disliked the most this year, I really have to say The Darkest, Dark Tower. I think Dark Tower takes that cake.
I forgot that movie was a thing.
That movie was a thing. And Stephen King just thinks that, you know, they just didn't do the R-rated version. If they'd have done the R-rated version, they would have been okay. Uh-huh. Waited with bated breath for that film for a decade, and this is what I get. And it's like, the pieces and the parts are here, but you, like, sense that there are a whole bunch of people involved who don't understand or get the material, and you've got a studio who's freaking out, panicking about how they're going to have to market this to people, and how people are going to get, like, we are 15 years past Lord of the Rings, okay? Like, we should be able to, like, trust an audience that they can get multi-dimensional parallel universes. Like, we should be able to get that. But they didn't. And they didn't trust their filmmakers, or they didn't hire the right filmmakers, and they didn't empower them. And they didn't trust themselves, they didn't trust the material, and they didn't trust the audience. And as a result, you get a movie that's out there in the middle of August and just dies, and people, you know, forget. I mean, imagine a world in which Dark Tower works, and then it does what it did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it alone was enough to, like, cause every studio that has the rights to a Stephen King property to go back in and start development on bringing them back. Because everybody wanted to capitalize on that. Imagine if that had happened 6 weeks after Dark Tower was being successful and getting ready to do this multi-platform, game-changing thing where, like, movie stars were going to be in an HBO series that was going to link in between films. Like, that would have been huge. And no, we just have to take a direct leak on this. So, I mean, Matthew McConaughey just too over the top, not reining in, not taking the role seriously, basically playing Al Pacino from The Devil's Advocate, and it just doesn't work well. He's not, like, the setting of Devil's Advocate calls for that. This setting did not. And he's obviously not as skilled an actor as Pacino either. So, all in all, very disappointed in The Dark Tower, and it was my most disappointing film of 2017.
That is understandable. Again, it was so bad, I forgot it happened.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of crap that happened in January that, like, none of us were ever going to actually remember. But one of the things we did talk about on our podcast at this time a year ago was how crowded February and March were.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, all of those films in March succeeded meeting their financial goals.
Yeah.
Kong Skull Island was a success. Logan was a success. Power Rangers was a moderate success. Yeah. So, I mean, the 50 Shades did what it was supposed to do. The Lego Batman movie exceeded expectations.
Wait, Beauty and the Beast was in March.
Beauty and the Beast, you know, obviously is going to be the number two movie for the entire 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Huge hit. Breaking all kinds of records that The Hunger Games had set. So, that February-March corridor is now fair game again. And it's no longer a dumping ground. And so that's going to be interesting to see going forward how that works with Black Panther this particular year coming out in February, A Wrinkle in Time coming out in March.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see.
See, that's another one, though, where it's Disney on Disney. And I think that that's about I think that one has less time. I think that one's like 3 weeks difference. So we'll get a preview of what they think is going to happen with Infinity War and Solo.
Alright, so let's move to our 2018 release calendar.
Yay!
So, we're going to go month by month. So, in January of this year, we have several very big, several moderate openings. Insidious, The Last Key. This movie franchise has somehow stumbled upon continuing. It has a fan base for sure, but, you know, it's not exactly the cream of the... It's not The Conjuring.
Oh, no.
I mean, these movies are typically released in August, so the move to January is a bit strange.
Well, no, that just means that it kind of just tells you what they think of it.
Liam Neeson returns to the action adventure role of a really angry dad protecting his daughter in The Commuter.
All I know about that movie is I saw the commercial, and it looks like they flipped the train on top of him, and he's still going to survive. So that kind of just tells me everything I need to know about that movie.
Well, I mean, he's done it on the ground. He's done it in the air. So now he has to do it on the train. Like, it's the same movie. He's done it out in the wilderness. Like, Liam Neeson, credit to that dude. He found a new career niche in his mid-50s.
Yeah, but he was just talking about it. He's like, I'm an old dude. I'm gonna stop doing these movies. And I agree with him. He should stop. He wants to stop because he is an old dude. But I hope it ain't with this one because I don't think this is gonna be any good.
Paddington 2 is tearing up the international box office right now. I don't think you know how well it'll be received stateside, especially with still having some taint of the Weinstein brand on it.
If you didn't already know, you wouldn't know because they moved it to
Sony
to WB.
WB.
And I think people that. If people like the first one, they'll go and see this one. I like the first one, so I'll be there opening weekend.
All right. We have Proud Mary, which is also coming out. Looks like it could actually be really interesting.
I don't know what to think of it. I like what they're going for. I just don't know if I like the movie.
And then toward the back half of the month, we get The Maze Runner, The Death Cure. A film, again, another series of films that generally had August, September release dates, was doing really well, and then their actor nearly died.
Exactly. That's the most intriguing thing about that movie for me, is that Dylan O'Brien almost died. He was laid up for a long time. Enough so that I didn't know they'd ever finish this movie. But he did another movie after that.
He did the American Assassin movie yeah. with Michael Keaton.
And that was how I first found out that, you know, that he was still all right. He could still function. Because I saw previews for that. I'm like, oh, okay. So he must have done this after he almost died. So he's okay.
Moving on to February. I mean, is there anything else in January that area that interests you at all?
Not at all. I mean, while they're trying to improve it, January is still the smoking smolder of crap.
Dude, it's 32 degrees outside in South Louisiana in the beginning of January. Like, half the country is going to be under snow for a good portion of the year. So, yeah. There's a reason why January, at least January, is still in the
middle. Yeah. Ain't nobody trying to deal with that.
No. So, let's move on to February. Chad, did you know there was a Cloverfield movie coming out in, like, 5 weeks?
I found that out about, 30 minutes ago when I looked at that list. Like, oh.
I have to assume that's God Particle. I mean, we've heard everything about God Particle and, like, David Oyelowo. It was one of the first things he did following up Selma.
Oyelowo?
Yeah. It was surrounding, you know, the Cloverfield universe and, like, this little small niche of movies that, like, J.J. hatched that he thought they could tie the Cloverfield name to and it would work. And it did for 13 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah. So, I just assume they're going to go the same kind of marketing route they went with that one as they are with God Particle or whatever this movie is, because we don't know what it is. Because it's 6 weeks away, maybe, more or less. 5 weeks. We still have a name. No promotional things for it. But that's what they did with Cloverfield Lane, and that worked out well.
Yep. Moving on, later in mid-February, we have the 1517 to Paris, which is an action adventure terrorism movie, and 50 Shades Freed.
This movie franchise needs to roll into a ball and die.
And it will. Interestingly enough, it's before Valentine's, because it's on the 9th.
Valentine must be in, like, the middle of the week. So, I guess.
Yes, because Black Panther's on the 16th.
Yeah, that's why. But no, even though that's, like, that is counter-programming, because I would think, like...
Kingsman was counter-programming to it the first time.
Yeah, they shouldn't have been afraid to put it on that date, but it would get smoked. Like, whew, bad.
Chad, what do you make of this Peter Rabbit movie? Why would Dom Hill Gleason and Rose what's her name?
It's not Rose Byrne.
No, it's not Ron. She's from X-Men First Class. She was in the Neighbors movies.
Wait, that is Rose Byrne.
Yeah.
She was married to Seth Rogen that's Rose Byrne. I don't remember. Because every time that a trailer comes up for that, So my kid gets really amused, and I'm like, so I think it's going to be one of those kind of movies.
I'm intrigued for the simple purpose of the idea of Domhnall Gleeson versus the rabbits. How many ways can rabbits find to antagonize humans?
It's just so... So I think...
Like, they showed this trailer while I was in Jumanji. And, like, I literally, the kids, I was in an auditorium full of kids, and the kids were laughing their rear ends.
Yeah.
And, like, one actually turned to his parents and was like, you're going to take me to see that.
Yeah. Yes, every time I've seen that trailer, it's been around kids, and all the kids have been amused. And every time I'm sitting there like, God, this is a grandparents movie. I'm trying to sucker this. I'm trying to throw this one off on them. But I just feel it's going to be like the Garfield movie, or maybe the first Mercy movie, and that it's tolerable and the kids are going to go see it, but then that's going to spawn a sequel that's going to be god awful.
It's going to be directed to DVD.
No. Both the Smurfs and Garfield, they both got theater sequels. I saw one of those crappy things in the theater, so I know. And that's probably what's going to happen with this.
Moving on to the following weekend in February, we have a small movie called Black Panther.
Y'all can't see the shit eating grin I have on my face, because yes, we do have Black Panther. I have already taken off that Friday. I plan on seeing it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at least one time each day, as do most of the black people that I know. This is going to be
a cultural event.
Oh, it is. This is like a holiday weekend. People are trying to figure out what they're wearing. They're getting T-shirts. They're getting scarves. They're getting every like. Look, this is going to be the weekend that we all go to the movies. I'm excited for not just for the movie, but for the experience of it all, because it's going to be an experience.
Any thoughts on box office?
I don't know. I haven't thought about the opening weekend.
It ain't got nothing until War with Grandpa at the end of the month.
So in my mind, I feel like Marvel would think this is a 750, between 750 and 8 worldwide kind of movie. But then I think about, they're just the people that I know, like older people, like my mom, that doesn't even think about any of these things. She wants to go see this, and I know there's a lot of people like that. I know there's a lot of people I know that watch movies in less than reputable ways that are willing to put money down to go see it. So I think this movie, I think it's going to exceed expectations. I would love for it to be one of the first solo Marvel movies to hit $1 billion that didn't involve Iron Man. That might be a stretch, but I think this movie can go over 850 into the nines total. I have no idea what opening weekend is going to be, but it'll be here's a shot. It'll be an over Justice League numbers, but that's all I can say.
I mean, I think it's going to be, at least for me anyway, it's going to be really, really interesting to see how this turns out, because I think that, you know, there are a bunch of theories rolling out there right now about where the Soul Stone is located, and we see Wakanda being attacked by the Order, the Black Order, mm-hmm. in the Infinity War trailer, and some, you know, parallels being drawn there that maybe there has to be a reason why they're there. Or they're going to there. So, and that's the only stone we haven't seen yet.
Yeah. That would go to the theories that we'll see it in Black Panther in some form or fashion. But
and I think it's a good testing ground too for Marvel to get a good idea of how Captain Marvel will fare a year later.
Yes and no. I think. Well, where did they're from? Captain Marvel in March. Yeah, it'll be a good between that and like Winter Soldier. They'll have enough data to have a range of what they expect Captain Marvel to do.
Indeed. Any thoughts on War with Grandpa? Any thoughts on the fact that De Niro continues to do this? These are not the films that will be on De Niro's top of his obituary when he passes away.
I think De Niro's in his, like, you know, I don't really need the money, so I'm just going to do things that I find appealing and funny to me. And it just so happens that he likes crap. So this is what we're stuck with. You know, he's still supposedly doing that Irishman movie with
He is
Scorsese.
Doing it. It is being shot. It's going to be released through Netflix, which means he has no shot in hell of ever getting it again.
Yeah, but if you want some more, like, you know, vintage flavor of De Niro, you have the Irishman to come out. If you want some of this light, fluffy fare we've got getting lately, you got this.
You mean
this.
The guy who was shirtless with Zac Efron?
Yeah, yeah. Again, he's doing this strictly for the giggles, because he don't need the money.
We assume he doesn't need the
money. I think it's pretty safe to say he doesn't need the money.
Alright. I'm looking forward to Annihilation. I think this could be just completely balls-to-the-walls craziness in a Darren Aronofsky mother type of way. And I think it has the possibility to be like Get Out and Split, in that it could start a conversation in social media that's going to cause more people to go see it than normally would. And I think it's going to be beneficial to Natalie Portman's career again. So I'm really looking forward to Annihilation.
It's one of those that I'm eager to see the reception to. I ain't never gonna see it, but you know. Yeah, there's a lot of people involved that I'm rooting for it.
All right, let's move on to March. What are your thoughts on the Death Wish adaptation?
They could have put it straight on DVD and it'd probably done better.
Fair enough. Chad, how many times have you seen the trailer for Alpha?
How many times have we gone to the movies since October? So probably about six. And every time I say the same thing, I'm like, the story of a boy and a dog. We get it. I'm tired of seeing it.
What are your thoughts on Red Sparrow and Jennifer Lawrence playing basically Black Widow?
Oh, I forgot that was a thing. I don't know. I don't know, because it's, you know, we had Charlize Theron and Atomic Blonde, and then you're gonna have this primary movie in January. So this is like another one of those kind of movies, just putting Jennifer Lawrence in it.
But this is based off a series of books, so there's a franchise potential.
Yeah, and which is why you get Jennifer Lawrence to do it. I just don't know. If it's good, people will go see it. But I don't know what I think of her as, like, that type of action star. I mean, yeah, she was in the Hunger Games, and that is action, but I don't think of her, like, as this... I'm a beat 'em up kind of action star. Katniss was more of a, you know, did action to survive kind of action star. So I don't know. It seems like a weird fit for me, but I get why you get her, because it has franchise potential.
It's weird to me for the simple purpose that Marvel still does not have any agreement in place to do a Black Widow movie, and with what we learn about Widow in Age of Ultron, it just seems like there's a natural fit there to tell that backstory with a woman who has a history of making action movies.
So, you're right. However, and please don't kill me on the internet for this, but I just want you to think, look at the list of things that Marvel has going on movie-wise right now. Where do you fit a Black Widow movie?
A Black Widow and Hawkeye movie, and you said it in the past.
No, not that way. I mean, like, physically on the release calendar, where do you fit a Black Widow movie? Because you're going to have to take something off.
As of right now, there's nothing on the books past July of 2019.
Yeah, there's nothing on the books. However,
I mean, there's a map in somebody's office of like, what they're planning to do.
Yes.
And we don't know that this is not one of the movies on that board. But if you're making three movies a year at that clip, I mean, so, in one of your release windows, whether it be early spring, summer, or winter, there's bound to be a place to put a movie like this in between, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Doctor Strange 2, Captain Marvel 2, Black Panther 2, Avengers 5.
So what, you just rattled off like, what, 5 movies? So
Ant-Man and the Wasp 3.
So that fills up 2 years. And
You're not going to do two sequels. You may do two sequels every year, but you're not going to do three sequels every year. So you will need a property, you know, to expand out your universe. And both, you know, both Renner and
Johansson
are both willing to do it. They're both open to doing it.
So before, you know, the events of the last few months, I would say, yeah, you can probably sneak it in like 3-4 years. Because while they probably have everything mapped out for a ways away, their calendar is like locked down for sure for like the next 2 years going. Like 2 years at a time, straight up. But now you've introduced this whole thing of, we've got the Fantastic Four and the X-Men back.
You're never touching X-Men. You're never touching X-Men. You're never touching them properly. Provided that Dark Phoenix doesn't completely bomb, they're gonna let Ken Burn play in his toy box. So, and they don't really have a way to bring them into the main MCU, considering the fact that, you know, you had to use the Mind Stone as a way to explain Wanda and Petra. So, like, really, they can let the X-Men do their thing and not touch them. Galactus, Doom. Doom's completely easy to do because now you're introducing Wakanda, which is a nation we've never seen or heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And you can very easily say that his nation is a small, secluded nation somewhere.
Well, I agree that...
And I'm not sure you're touching a Fantastic Four film in the next 3 years. I think you're going to utilize the three big parts of that property. Doom, Galactus, and Silver Surfer at some point in an Avengers setup, and you're going to introduce... You can introduce them through Baxter Tower, taking over for Avengers Tower, and doing it that way. I don't think you're going to get a full-on Fantastic Four movie by before 2021.
I would agree before 2021. And I also agree with the thing about the X-Men, like, I don't think you bring them into the universe proper. I think you can let them sit by themselves. I have absolutely, much like how you have your feelings about Robert Kurtzman. Was it Kurtzman? Those are my feelings about Simon Kinberg. There's like no way Dark Phoenix is good.
That guy got his own offices. Like, they set up an office building and decorated it with monster stuff. And was like having a cast photo with all these very expensive actors. And it all vanished away because he couldn't do it. They got 3/4 of the way down the line on a Star Trek movie, and they pulled the plug on him because they didn't want to take the chance on him. And Universal was still like, here, money, do.
And all of those feelings are the same feelings I have for Kinberg. I mean, yeah, let's not forget, since The Last Stand, he's written all of these movies. The only arguably good one out of the bunch is Days of Future Past. That's it. The rest of them...
Which takes a giant leak on its own canon.
Yeah, and you know, to however
like
you want...
Like, you release the Wolverine that previous July, and you say, Logan's now the only one who remembers that any of this happened the way that you've seen it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you just erased the movie that came out the year before. But that's what he's done, and you're giving him this movie, and...
He failed to tell the Dark Phoenix story successfully the first time, and you're gonna let him
do it again.
Do it again,
and this time he's got full reign. So you really expect this to work out well? I don't see it working out, but I do think they let X-Men play their own toy box. However, even if they let X-Men stay separate, it'll still be under the Marvel Studios banner. So I think they will still count against the three. And there's no way you let them sit on the shelf. And so I think just movie number wise, it's hard to fit in a Black Widow movie. I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. It's just with everything they've got going on. Actually, it would probably be smart for them to stick it in so they can slow down and take a breath, because it is a smaller movie. And
it's an action movie, and it's set in the time. You can talk about how she got that red in her ledger with Barton.
Yeah. Now, the thing with that is, if you're going to do it in the past, you can't wait too long to do it, because...
Right.
I mean, Scarlett is, what, she's like 3 years younger than me, and she doesn't look it at all. But Renner, like, he's getting up there.
But I think that's what you do. To me, is like, you do it, like, you have nothing committed on a release schedule, but after July 2019. And by the way, another impact of this Fox Disney deal that I don't think anybody's talking about. How's it going to affect their negotiations with Sony on oversharing Spider-Man? Because those rights, that contract ends after Homecoming 2, or whatever the second solo Spider-Man movie is going to end up being in July of 19, which John Watts is already working on. Now, by all accounts, they should be more than happy to go ahead and you know, make that deal again, because Spider-Man Homecoming did way better money than anybody ever expected. And he's going to be in the 2 Infinity War movies, which is going to raise his profile even more. But, like, how does that affect it, too?
I mean, it should have some effect. But if Sony knows it's good for them, they'll try to get some more money out of Marvel and then sit back and shut up.
We will see. So that covers March. Or that covers February. Let's move on to March. So your thoughts on A Wrinkle in Time?
So I keep seeing the trailers for it, and visually it looks stunning. I don't know anything about the story, so it's not connecting with me on that level.
You work in a library, you have access to the book.
The book is sitting on the table in my house, and I just still haven't read it. I checked it out when I heard this movie was happening, and I just haven't read it yet. So I probably will before it comes out, but it looks really good. The cast and diversity that Ava DuVernay was purposely going for, it's all right there, and I'm all excited for that. It's just on the story level, I'm like, I don't know if it's my kind of story. I'm still going to see it. I'm still going to take my daughter to see it, but just on a story level, it hasn't connected with me yet, but that's not a bad thing.
So, if Black Panther is going to be a cultural event, why would this not be a cultural event of the same magnitude? African-American protagonist, African-American director, with a tremendous amount of positive heat from her last film. Her last two films, technically, because she directed the 13th.
It's a couple of different things. Most because superheroes are the hottest thing going right now. And this is... Like, for all intents and purposes, yeah, we had other black superheroes, but, like, this is...
Hello, Blade.
He's literally the king. The king of the black superheroes is coming on the screen, and it's the first one getting this type of money behind it, with the Marvel name behind it, and then you look at the cast, and, it's just, like, if you look at the poster of all the names on there, there are only two white people in it, and they're not even that high up the list. So it's like, this is just like a black movie, and we don't really get a whole bunch of big budget black movies. While A Wrinkle in Time, it does have the black protagonist, and there are people of color all up and down it. It doesn't. It's a different feel, because one, you pull up the Black Panther cast list, black across the board. This one is not so much, and I don't know. Like, to the general movie-going audience, I don't think the general movie-going audience knows there's a black director behind either one of these. They're just going to Black Panther because it's Black Panther. They don't know that Ava DuVernay... Most of them probably don't even know her name, let alone that she's black. And a lot of people just aren't going to jive with what the story's trying to tell, because it seems really sci-fi, and... Culturally, a lot of black people don't really drive a sci-fi like that. So that is the difference. Now, to people that know, there are going to be people that are more excited for this one than Black Panther, but...
Indeed. So after that, you get the Vikander Tomb Raider movie. The last bastion of hope for video game adaptations. No, Jumanji does not count as a video game adaptation.
No. I don't know. Like, there's only been that one trailer. And, like, while she looks good in the role and all that stuff, I'm not over the moon about anything I've seen so far.
They're getting tone right. I mean, they're getting tone somewhat closer to, you know, the Jolie movies, and they're playing up the archaeological aspect of it, and they're playing up the adventure part of it. So, I mean, it will function as an origin story, and it will focus a lot on her relationship to her father, and I think it looks really good. I think it has a lot of potential. I'm just interested to see if the marketing can do it and put it over the top, because and if critics are okay with it.
Yeah.
Good word of mouth could really help Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm waiting to see. There's got to be another trailer coming soon to see more of what they have. I hope it's good, because I really like her, and it looks, tonally, it looks right.
Indeed. So, Chad, we also in March have a movie that I'm very much looking forward to, the new Wes Anderson movie, Isle of Dogs. Yeah. Guys, dude's on a hot streak, and it's his return back to stop motion animation after Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah. I think I've only seen this trailer once, and watching it, I was like, once he said it's Wes Anderson, I'm like, oh, okay. But the whole trailer, I'm like, I don't know what to think of this. And I still don't. So
essentially, it's a mashup of Grand Budapest and Moonrise Kingdom. Little boy goes off to find his lost dog, ends up on this island of dogs. Dogs help him track down the dog that he lost.
Yeah, it's... there's a lot going on in such a small window of time. So, it's intriguing to me, but I can't say it's anything else other than intriguing. But intriguing is good. Intriguing can get you through the door.
Alright. Next up in March, we have Pacific Rim Uprising. Your thoughts on John Boyega making his solo franchise leading debut as the son of Idris Elba?
Because of him, I hope this movie does well. But there is nothing about this movie that makes me want to see it. I never saw the first one. I had nothing against it. It was just something I missed. This one looks even more like cartoony than the last one. So I don't know how people that love like that will like this one. But yeah, I'm pulling for John Boyega, but I don't know about this movie.
All right. Next up we have where was that? Sherlock Gnomes.
This is another grandparent movie. I never saw Romeo and Juliet. Never planned on seeing it, but my daughter saw it and wants to see it. So somebody else is taking it, not me.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about God's Not Dead 3?
Oh, can we go negative?
But they've made a franchise out of it, Jack.
I'm surprised. But they found the thing that worked for them, and they're going with it.
And they found their release window right around Easter, so...
I mean, that is fitting, that works, but I don't care.
I'm interested in the Mary Magdalene movie because I think that that actually has some really good potential.
Anybody we know involved with it?
Some big names. I can't remember off the top of my head exactly who, but there has some star power behind it. It's not just a faith-based movie for faith-based people.
Okay, well, I'll have to remember to look for that. I didn't even know this was happening.
I mean, I would like... The movies that, like, the faith-based, you know, like, biblical epics went out the window in the 50s and never really made a comeback. And pretty much in the last 20 years, what you've had is a series of what I call faith-based movies for faith-based people. They're not movies that are meant to branch out to a more generalized assembly. They're meant for the faith community. Fireproof would be a good example of this. God's Not Dead would be a good example of this. 30 Minutes in Heaven or whatever the movie was with the kid who died and spent some time in heaven and came back. The football movie, Walking with Giants. Like, these would be... Or Facing the Giants. These would be, like, what I would call a niche that has started up in the last 20 years of movies that are faith-based for faith-based people, you know, and not really outreach potential. What excites me more about a film based on faith or faith principles is something like a Darren Aronofsky's Noah. Something like a Last Temptation of the Christ by Martin Scorsese. A talented, passionate filmmaker taking the material and doing their own evaluation of it and interpretation of it and putting it to screen. And sometimes that isn't always going to work, i.e. giant rock monsters in Noah. But sometimes it does work. Last Temptation of the Christ, while controversial, is a beautiful film, which has a lot of, in many of the same ways that Silence causes you to reevaluate things, Last Temptation definitely causes you to reevaluate some things and examine your faith and examine your perspective on a story that you've known, or at least to look at it from a different angle. And I get why we've moved toward faith-based movies for faith-based audiences, but I would like to see just to throw a name off the top of my head, Sofia Coppola do a movie about Mary Magdalene, an Aronofsky take. There's a movie about the Apostle Paul. I'd like to see a talented filmmaker take that on with a brand name who could potentially bring an interesting perspective. A Ridley Scott doing a movie about Paul, the life of Paul, would be an interesting hook that would get me interested and would get some bigger names involved. That's what I would like to see us move more toward, because right now it just, like, these things like God's Not Dead and Facing the Giants and Fireproof, like, they're good. They're doing good things. They're producing a good outreach. But they're preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. And they're reaffirming your own belief system. And I think that in film, it's much more interesting to see talented filmmakers taking on the material and challenging mm-hmm. our perspective.
I would agree.
So... the Paul of Apostle of Christ movie is also for Easter. God's Not Dead 3 also on Easter, and the Mary Magdalene also on Easter. That brings us to the other Easter movie, Spring Break movie, from Mr. Steven Spielberg. Are you ready to go to the Oasis? Are you ready for Ready Player One?
So I'm still really excited for this movie. However, after the last trailer, I love the first trailer so much. The second trailer was underwhelming to me. And watching the second trailer, it's, you know, they changed stuff from the book, which is fine.
The second trailer is more to get generalized people on board.
Yeah. I need to see it to see what the changes are and how the way they're trying to go. Because it's different, but I don't know how different. And again, I'm not one of those people that think you can't change the book. That's fine. I was not expecting the motion capture for the Oasis world to be so, like, I thought it would be more...
photorealistic?
Yeah. and it's not, which caught me off guard. And it could completely work with what they're going for. It was just not what I was expecting. And the second trailer really showed that. So I need to see more. I'm still excited because I really like the book, but that caught me off guard.
All right, moving on to April. What are your feelings right now about the New Mutants movie?
I like that we're continuing to flesh out the genre and that we're going to a new place. I don't particularly like the place they're going because it's horror and it's not something I'll ever see. But good for them for trying that. I do wish there was more of a hint that, you know, this is associated with the X-Men, because everything we've seen so far, it just looks like a straight up horror movie. I get it. That's what they're going for. But people do need to know, if you want to pull in those type of people, you kind of want to let them know that this does take place within the X-Men universe. That's my only gripe with it so far. I hope it does well, because the people behind it seem to be really passionate about it. But, you know, it's straight up horror, and I'm not going to see it until somebody else sees it and says, okay, it's not quite so horror.
All right. So further down in April, I'm also looking forward to the Chadwick Boseman movie. I've heard really, really great things. Why they're putting that movie out in April and not taking advantage of Jason Clarke's performance as Teddy Kennedy, I have no idea. I've heard nothing but positive things about that. I really am looking forward to that in 2018. Chad, are you aware there's an Overboard remake happening and that it's coming out in April?
I heard that it was coming out. That it was happening. I did not know it was coming out next year, or that it was coming out in April. I didn't even think that they had shot the dang thing, so this is news to me.
There's a trailer out.
There is?
And they haven't changed a darn thing about it. Like, they haven't gender swapped anything. They haven't, like, it, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna watch that, but I'm going by the expression on your face, it sounds like this is going to crash and burn. So I need to see how bad it's going to be. I'm not going to pay for this. I'll probably never see it.
And Chad, that Rampage movie is a thing. Rock's going to continue to cash in on his height streak.
Yeah.
But he does not have Kevin Hart to save him this time.
Look, I saw that trailer and I thought this movie looked a whole lot better than it had any right to look. Because, you know, it's based off an arcade game, which doesn't have a whole lot to it. You control a big monster, you climb up buildings, you eat people, and you destroy stuff. So the fact that they want to make this a movie was a big why for me anyway. But the trailer was like, you know, this looks like a big dumb action movie that might be enjoyable. I still don't think I'm going to see it, but it looks better than it has any right to.
And Chad, are you excited about the return of the Super Troopers?
No. I saw the first one years ago. I was drunk, so I don't remember most of it.
It's funny.
I remember it being funny, but I don't think I'd find it funny now.
That's kind of my concern. Comedy sequels are hard to pull off. This was crowdfunded as it was, so it wasn't like there was a studio desire to do it, which might actually help, but... Like, my thing, personally, is that, like, comedy sequels are hard to pull off, and this feels like something 90s, something late 90s, early 2000s, and the kind of comedy that was... Comedy is one thing, unlike drama or comic book movies or any of these other different genres. Comedy is an ever-changing thing. What is funny to people in the 1960s may not be as funny to people in the 80s. What's funny to people in the 80s might not be as funny to people in the 90s. It's just taste change. The audience taste change. That's the way it works. We saw it with the Hangover movies. Like, Hangover 1 gets a huge reception. 2 and 3 just falter, and they're released within 5 years of each other.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned that they're going to go with the same tone and tenor and same delivery as they did in the 90s, and it's just...
It's going to fall flat.
Going to fall flat, because it's... Now, the thing that might help that is it's crowdfunded, so a lot of those people who had a desire to see the movie are the ones behind it. Yeah. So maybe it does get a small enough... At least enough of an audience to make its money back.
you know, that's what you can hope. I just have no idea. It's, I remember being funny, but again, I was drunk. So hopefully the people that want to see it and they enjoy what they get.
Indeed. So that brings us to May, and a small movie that opens over the course of the first weekend in May, Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, everybody here, everybody listening to this knows I'm going to see this movie. I'm intrigued to see what they're going to do with Thanos. That is the biggest question for me coming into this movie.
Allegedly in the first 10 minutes, like, we establish him as the biggest bad in the history of the MCU.
Yeah, so... I hope it lives up to that, because we've been building him for 6 years. Forget the rest of the villains. He needs to live up to the hype, and if he does, I think a lot of their villain woes will be forgiven.
I think that's what the I think that's what all of this hinges on, really.
Yeah, everything depends on Thanos and how well people receive him.
Because you can't just rely, like, Civil War works. I love Mordo. I love the villain that they have in Civil War.
Zemo.
I love Zemo. Okay, he's one of my favorite Marvel villains because he's subtle and his plan isn't elaborate, and he wants to create division amongst the team, which he successfully does. But part of the reason why that action set piece in the cave, in the bunker in Russia works is because when Tony says that line about he was my friend, well, so was I, it works and it has meaning and it has gravitas because we've been with these characters for 10 years. You can't just rely on we're gonna put our heroes in a whole bunch of danger and you're gonna feel sorry for them because you love them so much. Like, the danger has to feel legitimate. The stakes have to feel legitimate. And my only concern with Infinity War is that they've been on the campaign trail, talking, that they don't produce.
Yeah. Yeah, that should be everybody's biggest concern at this point. But, and it's one of the things that, you know, we can't depend on the Marvel track record for, because their villains have not been great. And that's partially been by design, but if you believe what they say by design of this one, this is Thanos' movie, so we should get what we've been waiting for.
And then after Avengers Infinity War, we don't have very much in May.
Nope. There's a big old vacuum. It starts with Disney and it ends with Disney.
So let's talk about that other Disney movie in May. We've already touched on it some. What are your expectations? I know you said that $800 million is the most that you think a standalone film, non-episodic Star Wars film in May can do.
Yes. Particularly this one. I didn't think Rogue One would make $1 billion. So I don't think the standard for episodic movies should be $1 billion. This one has its own set of challenges. So, and unlike Avengers, which has nothing behind it, this one will have things that follow it, so that's going to cut into what it makes. So I don't think the window's very high for this one. But if he gets $800 million from everything that's going on with this movie, that has got to be a huge success for Lucasfilm.
All right, let's move on from May to June. The next week after Solo: A Star Wars Story, we get the Deadpool sequel.
Yeah, see, and while this one won't cut into Solo as much because it is rated R, it's going to cut into it a good bit.
Can it be as good?
It's hard, because at the end of the day, Deadpool is a comedy, and as you've been saying all day, comedy sequels they rarely improve upon the original. However, this one, I think it benefits itself because it is a superhero movie and so many other things are being added to it, that it has a chance. I just don't know. It as long as it's good, it's going to make its money. I think there will be more disappointment because people are going to have higher hopes. And that's not a bad thing. It's just a thing that happens when the first thing you do is so good.
Indeed. I'm more actually excited about the movie that follows that, which is the Ocean's 8 movie.
Yeah, I mean, they did the trailer, and I like what I'm seeing. It's just, can they carry that feel from particularly Ocean's 11 to this movie? I think if they can, with this cast, it could be something special. It's just a matter of, can they pull it off?
I'm also very interested in this Mr. Rogers documentary that comes out that Focus is releasing at that point, too. I think that's going to be really interesting and different.
Yeah, that's getting a wide release. Yeah, if it's on that list, I guess it's getting a wide release. I didn't know about it.
They bought it up at Sundance. Or they're going, no, they didn't buy it up at Sundance. They bought it and have distribution rights for it. And it's about Mr. Rogers.
I mean, who of a certain age didn't love Mr. Rogers and wouldn't want to see a documentary about him? Yeah, I'll see that one.
And then we get a movie that everybody's been waiting for a very long time, The Incredibles 2.
Yeah. Of all the Pixar movies, the one that has been screaming for a sequel finally gets it. We've only seen the teaser trailer. It's nice and cute. We haven't seen much else about it. So I don't know what to expect from this story, but it's The Incredibles. The first one was incredible, so this one's going to make a lot of money, and I'm ready to see it.
All right, and then we get Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom. Dinosaurs must be saved, Chad. Let's have an ethical debate about whether or not dinosaurs could be saved, even though we have the genetic material to make more dinosaurs if these dinosaurs die.
Yeah. I think this movie will see the biggest drop from one box office to its successor. Because I think the Jurassic World, it hit on everything that Jurassic Park was in a nostalgic way. And I think this one, it is just going to inevitably not live up to that, and it's going to show in the box office. I don't think it'll tank unless it's a bad movie. And I don't think it'll be a bad movie. I just think people will be like, well, I've already seen it, so I'm done.
And then, did you know that we're getting a Sicario sequel?
Yes, I did. I think there's already a trailer out for it.
There is. And I'm very much looking forward to that at the end of June of this year.
Yeah.
July brings us the next chapter in the Purge saga.
Again, I've never seen any of these movies, but the premise is interesting, and the people that have seen them like them. I guess we needed a fourth one. We'll see. As long as they still make them good, why not? So, you know, we'll see what happens with this one. I can't offer anything about the franchise.
And then we get back to Marvel movies with Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah. Ant-Man, I think it's, outside of Guardians, is probably the biggest surprise I've had from a Marvel movie. I think it is still my daughter's favorite Marvel movie. The first one is a lot of fun. It's a heist movie. And this one, we know it's not a heist movie, but how are they going to make it different and tie everything that happened in the Civil War with Ant-Man into this movie? So there's a lot of questions, but there's a lot of new parts added. The fact that we actually get the Wasp. And not only that, we get Evangeline Lilly as the Wasp, we get Michelle Pfeiffer as her mom back in this movie. So how does all that play together? So I'm curious. And how does this all fit after we see Avengers? So there's a lot of questions about this movie.
Yeah, it's odd placement, especially considering I don't know that Paul Rudd is actually in Infinity.
They won't say, but everything I've seen, I have not seen him in it.
So that'll be interesting. And then we moved. Chad, did you know that the people of Hotel Transylvania have to go on a summer vacation?
No. There's another one of those things.
Hotel Transylvania 3, summer vacation.
Another grandparents movie. I didn't see the second one, and I don't plan on it.
Then you get The Nun, which is part of the Conjuring universe.
Okay, we can roll with it.
And the Rock skyscraper movie.
I don't know how that works. It's a skyscraper. I don't know, but whatever.
Towering Inferno, basically.
Okay, whatever. You're pushing your luck there, Dwayne.
Chad, did you know that we're getting a Mamma Mia sequel?
Yes. I never saw the first one. I know it was all the rage. Hopefully all the people that thought it was all the rage the first time going to see this one.
I'd be leery. You saw what happened to My Big Fat Greek Wedding too.
Yeah. Yeah. I said that. I said I hope. I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh.
I've been waiting for that all day.
That happened. It's okay. So, did you also know that there is a Teen Titans Go to the Movies?
Yes. Which I knew about it, but I'm surprised that we're getting it now, because I just found out about it. They announced it like a month ago, so I thought it was coming out in 2019, and to see that it's coming out in 2018 is surprising, but it's supposed to be with all the same people from the TV show, and I don't know how that's going to work on the big screen, because my first thought is My Little Pony, the movie, which, you know, my daughter was entertained by, but it wasn't anything to write home about.
Didn't have a lot of, but didn't that My Little Pony movie have a lot of star power behind it?
There were a lot of it was a core cast from the TV show, but a lot of celebrity guests. Yes.
So wouldn't they do the same thing for?
That's what I would think, but I don't know how that's gonna translate with Teen Titans. I mean, if anything, Teen Titans is more equipped to have that by its nature, but I don't know. It's just, it's curious that it's coming out this year instead of next.
Well, it's also, you know, the best depiction of, or the depiction of Cyborg that everybody knows and loves. So.
Yeah, that's where we got the Booyah from.
Yeah. So.
Well, speaking of Cyborg, the next thing on that on this list is an untitled DC film, which we know ain't happening.
Untitled DC film 2008-17.
Yeah, but we know that's not happening. So, see what's happening in August. August we get Equalizer 2. I knew that was coming. I didn't know when it was coming. So, yay that it's here. I didn't really see the first one, but I heard it was okay, so it's fine.
Well, Denzel still has to work, man. I mean, come on.
Does he really have to work, though? I mean, he is Denzel. He doesn't have to work. But apparently he enjoys doing this, so whatever. It's fine. The same week as that is the Predator movie, which I would have thought that wouldn't have been a thing. They would have moved that. But no, here we are. The Predator's going up against the Equalizer 2, which I would think would have similar audiences. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm actually more interested in that Barbie movie that keeps getting pushed back and changing actresses over and over and
again,
over again.
Again, they just changed it to, what's her name?
Anne Hathaway.
Again, and I felt like I just heard that, and that this movie's still coming out. It's like, I'm amazed.
That Scarface remake that's gone through like three directors is also still on the books.
See, I think that's one of those that we're going to lose sooner or later, because I don't even think we have a director for it. Cause the heir was going to do it, and now he's not. I don't think they replaced him, so I think that one's going to be kicked to the curb.
And then we also have that Meg movie starring Jason Statham versus the shark.
We're getting that one, because they already started putting out posters of that big, giant, prehistoric shark. If you like shark movies, I guess you should go watch this.
And then we move to September. There's still Goosebumps 2 on the books. It's got a writer, it's got a director, but no one knows if it has a Jack Black yet or not.
Yeah, and considering they haven't started shooting that yet for a September release, I don't think that's happening this year either.
But what is happening is the Robin Hood adaptation with our boy Iggy from Kingsman playing him.
So like years ago, we made fun of this, right?
Right.
Okay.
The idea of a Robin Hood shared cinematic universe. Yeah, somebody made $1 million off of it.
Yeah, yeah, good for that guy. This movie's gonna suck.
Well, what's interesting is right behind it they have a adaptation of The Kid Who Would Be King, which is, I would assume, a author movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, I don't know.
Then we move into October. We have the Star Is Born remake that Bradley Cooper is directing.
Yeah, I think they moved that up because I don't think it was originally there, or moved it back. So people might. I think that's what it was. They moved it back. So it's signaling that the studio might think that there is serious Oscar buzz for somebody in this movie.
Did you also know that there's a Venom movie happening on that same day?
There's a what?
There's a Venom movie happening on that same day that is.
I keep hearing you say something, but it like blanks out when you say whatever the title is. So I'm just going to assume that whatever you're saying is just not happening. That's my assumption.
Alright. We're going to redo the Girl with Dragon Tattoo series.
Yeah. You know, they've been working on it for a while. It'll be interesting to see how it goes and how the reception is since they've had to redo everything.
And then we've got the Halloween remake or sequel or whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing, but they brought Jamie Lee Curtis back, so there's that.
So that, I mean, that, then we get, finally, after much anticipation, Andy Serkis's Jungle Book movie, Mowgli.
I feel so sorry for this movie. He made this movie first, had it all done, and then Disney came and was like, nope, we did it first. And now, because every time I hear somebody talk about it, they don't realize that this one was done and came to fruition first. It just got beat out the blocks to release, and now I think this movie's going to die on arrival, which is unfortunate because the cast is good and, you know, everybody likes Andy Serkis, who is the director.
Indeed they do. So let's move on to November. There's a movie called Dark Phoenix.
I've touched on this earlier in this episode. I don't see any way that this movie is good. You know, good on them for trying, but I don't think given this, Simon Kinberg was terrible. And I haven't liked any of the movies he wrote, and I'm not banking on the fact that he's writing any better or he's going to be a good director.
I'm very interested in the Mary Queen of Scots movie being done by Focus because I love what Focus does, and I'm, you know, English history is just always ripe for dramatic adaptation, and depending on who they have playing Mary Queen of Scots, it could be quite compelling and interesting.
Yeah.
What would be fun is if you get Cate Blanchett to play Mary Queen of Scots and she ends up winning an Oscar, so she ends up winning an Oscar playing both Queen Elizabeth and Mary Queen of Scots. We also had the live-action Mulan movie.
See, I think they moved that one since then because I don't think they started shooting yet. Like, they just cast Mulan like in the last month. So I think they moved that one back. I think that's in 2019 now.
We will see. And then we also have the Joe Johnston now directed Nutcracker in the Four Realms.
I've seen the trailer. I can't really get
it. That doesn't have any of his footage in it.
Oh, that's right, because that's right. They're reshooting this. I forgot they had that. See, if I forget this stuff, like the people that are going to go see it ain't going to have a clue about it. But yeah, now that you reminded me of that, I'm more keen to see this. My daughter really likes this story, so I'm going to see it anyway. It's the Nutcracker, you know, everybody kind of knows what the story is and the music. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes since we have, another director swap.
Indeed. Then we get the Illumination version of the Grinch.
I want to see that only because Benedict Cumberbatch is the Grinch. I've been waiting for a trailer for that this whole holiday season because I want to see how that looks.
And are you excited or not excited for Will Ferrell and his other boy to be Holmes and Watson?
I'm not excited. I will wait to see what a trailer looks like.
I am excited for the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the Crimes of Grindelwald, because I am really excited to see this world continue to build up.
I need to see the first one. I still haven't seen it. It's on TV, so I just need to catch it. But, I mean, it was received well enough, so, yeah, I will lean on your expertise on that one.
Ready for the much-anticipated Ralph Breaks the Internet?
I'm going to break it! Yes! Yes, I'm ready for it. Should have been here like 2 years ago. Instead, I got Frozen. I could have got this before Frozen. Yeah, I said it.
And then there's also an untitled Robert Zemeckis project coming.
Interesting to see what that is. I have no idea what it could possibly be.
The breakout hit of December 2018 could be Mortal Engines.
That movie looks so weird. I have no idea what's going on. And I guess that's kind of the point. So, I mean, it's really sci-fi, which is not appealing to me. So I just need to see more to see if I really want to see it or not.
Indeed. And then we have Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I was always going to see this because it's a Miles movie, but then I saw the trailer and the animation is so different and beautiful looking that I'm all on board this. I'm there.
And then we get our newest DC film, Aquaman.
Couldn't get away from it. I need to see what hopefully James Wan does what he does and makes a good Aquaman movie, and then we can further speculate on what the hell DC's doing and what the future holds. Because, yeah, this is the next movie after Justice League. A whole freaking year later, we finally get a movie after Justice League. So, yeah, Aquaman, I don't know how it's going to affect it's going to have on the future because it's going to be so far out, but, you know. I just hope it's good, and I hope James Wan does good things.
Your thoughts on the Bohemian Rhapsody?
That is a train wreck, but I hope it turns out well because who I like from Mr. Robot and some of the other things I've seen him in. But it's another director swap, but this time because the director disappeared and nobody knows why.
Do you know, according to him, they wouldn't let him go tend to his sick family.
Yeah, according to him.
You touched on the Bumblebee movie. Excited. Mm. Open. At least open to the possibility.
Yeah.
So, Chad, would you like to know why... would you like to know why Disney can't move a Star Wars story from May to December?
Well, I know why, but you can tell everybody else.
Because they have a Mary Poppins sequel releasing on Christmas Day 2018.
Yep. And if it's on Christmas Day, I mean, they're banking on the family money for that. And they're like, we don't care about you, Star Wars. We got built-in family money coming in, so we're not moving it. I think that says a lot about why they placed it here, how much faith they have in it, and also a little bit how much faith they have that Lucasfilm will get something palatable done by May.
I'm interested to see with Emily Blunt taking over for Julie Andrews, Lin-Manuel taking over for Dick Van Dyke having a cameo mm-hmm. in the film, Rob Reiner directing, I think. There are pieces and parts there that could make, you're dealing with the original Banks family, you're drawing off material that was written by Trevors for other books. There's a lot of potential for really good there. I mean, if Murder on the Orient Express can potentially spawn an entire franchise, I think this also has an opportunity to find a similar audience.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think this movie's going to do well.
And it's going to have Meryl Streep in it, so.
I forget she's in this too.
Yeah, her cousin Tootsie or Totsie or whatever her name is going to be.
I just watched Mary Poppins, the original, for the first time in years, like a month ago. And I'm kind of excited to see what an updated version of that's going to look like. I'm wondering when we'll see a first glimpse.
The problem for me is that, like, that story has so much relevance to today's society, and yet you're still going to be stuck in Depression-era London.
Yeah. Well,
there's a whole lot you can do with kids being disinterested and disengaged from their parents due to technology and all kinds of things.
I know, but, you know, this way, you still can, like I said, you can still do those things and not beat people over the head with it. It's like, it's the same thing, but it's different. So it's different enough that people don't feel like, oh, this is really me. Or they can think about it. I'm like, oh, I get what they were saying. It's a little different.
Be interesting.
Yeah.
So that is our what's coming in 2018, and we hope that you will join us on our wild and magical ride as we go through the rest of this year and see as many movies as possible and discuss them with you. So that'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
And shout out to our boy T-Bob Bear at T-Bob53 and at Jim Vavida on Twitter for Jim from IGN as well. Thank you very much and have a pleasant evening.